In Britain, at least, a lot of the newspapers have been covering the story that the UK is soon to send its first astronaut to the International Space Station. To find out what impact this might have on space science in the UK, I spoke to Robert Massey from the Royal Astronomical Society.
Tim Peake becoming the first official UK astronaut is a big change in the policy of the UK government. Britain's always taken the view in the past that we wouldn't take any kind of role in the human exploration of space. So whilst the other countries of the European Space Agency, so particularly France, Germany and Italy, were quite keen to send astronauts, the UK didn't take any part in that. So what that meant was that if you wanted to go into space, you had to do it via a different route. And in the case of people like Michael Fohl and Pierce Sellers and Nicholas Patrick, they became American citizens so they could join NASA and fly that way. Helen Sharman, who was the very first Briton to fly in space, she did it by winning a competition and going through private industry. She basically had private money to go up to what was the Russian space station at the time, Mir, and spent a while up there. Now, is it good value? Well, I guess it's an interesting question. I mean, the rampant investment in the European Space Agency that comes with it is, I think, pretty welcome, and most people working in space science would say that was a good thing to do. It's largely about industry, but there is an awful lot of scientific work that goes on with it. And Tim Peake is really part of that deal. So he applied to join the astronaut corps a few years ago, and the then science minister, Paul Drayson, approved that, and David Willetts, his successor, does the same. So I think the spin-offs from it, well, you're looking at having someone up there who can obviously take part in the industrial and scientific work that goes on the space station. You can also argue that having a Briton up there, perhaps someone who, well, there's a lot of expectations on him, that's for sure, but someone who's up there communicating with the wider world might help young people take an interest in this kind of thing and more broadly in science and technology as a whole. So those are the kind of calculations that are being made. I mean, investment in space per se, I think, is generally a good deal because you build a high-tech industry alongside it, and it is good for science because of the kind of ways we can explore the universe from space, if nothing else. If you can send telescopes into orbit, then having talented space scientists building these things on the ground gets you there.
I guess non-American astronauts going to the ISS has been in the news quite a lot the last few weeks because we've also heard about Chris Hadfield, who's had a phenomenal number of followers on Twitter.
I think that Chris Hadfield is the example that everybody is comparing Tim Peake with. I mean, and Chris Hadfield was doing a phenomenal job of communicating with people here. I mean, you just look at his YouTube videos, his tweets and so on, and I particularly liked it when he just responded to someone's question and squeezed out a hand towel in space to see what would happen. And it's completely intriguing to see this column of water held together by surface tension around it. Fantastic stuff. And, you know, playing the guitar and singing Bowie tracks and so on was, I guess you could say, the guy's pretty cool, really, and quite at ease with himself. Tim Peake doesn't quite promise to do that because he says he's not really musical enough, although he can play the guitar, but he was speculating that a friend of his had offered to teach him the didgeridoo, and so you might get the first didgeridoo player in orbit. Who knows exactly what that will sound like? I guess we'll wait and see.
Now, obviously, this is excellent for outreach. The cost people have been talking about is what, about £80 million? In recent years, robotic rovers like the Curiosity rover on Mars have been doing really first-rate work. Do you think humans can really compete with what rovers can do in terms of scientific research?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a Mars mission, for example, is hugely expensive and difficult to accomplish and all of those things. And I don't, for that reason, actually really think that we'll see anything on a big scale or any kind of human presence in getting close to the red planet for at least 20, 25 years. And the sad thing is it's actually been 25 years for as long as I can remember people talking about it. You know, in the 1980s, they were talking about the early 2000s and so on. That said, if you could get people there, if you could find a way to do it quickly and safely and conveniently enough and cheaply enough, people do have a certain flexibility and innate creativity that's very, very difficult to design into robotic systems. If you took a crew of astronauts who were trained properly, and they presumably had training in geology and biology and so on, and sent them exploring the surface of Mars, my guess is they'd do an awful lot in a matter of weeks and be better at doing that than rovers are in years and years. But, of course, rovers are, and it's entirely reasonable, so it's probably going to cost you about 1% of the cost of sending people there. So I think it's a decision to make. I mean, I suspect that it's worth factoring in that this is about exploration and high frontier and all of those things as much as it is about science. And as long as that's recognized and we don't strip the science budget bare to pay for something like that, then it's a reasonable enough thing to do.
That was Robert Massey from the Royal Astronomical Society, and we'll be returning to him in a moment to find out what other news he spotted this month.